Welcome in to Bears Weekly, a Chicago Bears Network production. Download the Chicago Bears official app, brought to you by Verizon, to follow the team on the go. Bears Weekly is brought to you by Advocate Healthcare, Bet Rivers, CDW, Connie's Pizza, and Miller Lite. Here are your hosts, Jeff Joniak, a.k.a. the Mayor of Bearsville, and his sidekick, Tom the Surfmaster Thayer.
All right, ready to go. More Bears talk, and welcome into Bears Weekly tonight. Hope your night is going well. I guess if you're a Blackhawks fan, you're going to have a great night. Tom, Jim Miller along shortly as well. Thanks to all the folks at ESPN for helping us out. As always, Eric Ostrowski, our Bears Radio Network executive producer, and, of course, Dan Brilli and Jordan Trudup from the Bears. Coming up in our next segment, we're going to sit down with a new second-year punter, Trenton Gill. Had a great start to his career. We'll see what he's been up to as the Bears get ready here in a few weeks to get back at it in training camp. Real quick on Bedard, because, you know, you entered out of Notre Dame. He's 17. He's 17 years old. And excitement all around the National Hockey League, but none more right here than Chicago.
Yeah, but, you know, almost like the NBA draft, one player does not a team make. So as much pressure as Connor Bernard's going to have on him in here immediately, especially of the production of Pat Kane in his past, he has a whole city on his shoulders. So it's not only what they're going to get with the first pick, they have to get multiple picks in this draft in order to turn this team into what we all hope it's eventually going to become.
Which is true in every sport, big time.
Yeah.
Every sport, you
that's
know.
That's what I was saying, like the NBA, you know, in San Antonio. You know, they bring in Victor, and I don't want to say his last name because I'm still butchering it. However, today he's measured at 7'3.5".
Yeah.
If people are disappointed because they thought he was 7'4 or 7'5, my gosh.
Well, that was in his stocking feet, so it's without shoes. So we'll give him a little boost.
Well, listen.
Who knows? He may grow.
When they measure you at the combine, they purposely take height away from you. They don't want to give you the 6'5 that you were listed at as in your high school program. They want to bring you down to 6'3¾" like they did.
Well, they don't want to. They're just trying to be realistic, Tom.
Well,
come on.
Okay, back your heels up to the wall.
You are always a conspiracy theorist.
Well, no. So you back your feet up against the wall. You lift your toes off the ground. That immediately shrinks you. And then they take the ruler and they stick it straight down to an inch below your actual scalp. I'm joking about that, but they press it down hard.
You are so funny because you probably thought you were taller than you actually were listed.
Well, that's what I said. In my high school program, you go back and look at Joliet Catholic, I was listed as 6'5".
And yeah, but you weren't. But
in Notre Dame, I was listed at 6'4", 6'5". And then when I got to the combine, I came out and I found out what was for real.
Oh, gosh. Do we have Jim Miller yet from SiriusXM NFL Radio? If we do, we'll bring him aboard. Jim, you there yet? Not yet. Okay. We'll get to Jim in just a minute. He had a good week as well down at the Senior Bowl. We'll talk about that, their Hall of Fame ceremony there. I got to talk about a couple of things, Tom. One, the Bears and Colts joint practice dates and times. That was released officially this week. Had some news that was going to happen, and I think it's a good thing. I like practicing with another team. It's, to me, ramps up practice pretty good. But this will be in Colts territory, so maybe some fans will travel out to see it. A ticket is free. You just got to get one. But it'll be a good couple of days of practice, and I noticed they're both at 6 o'clock at night.
That's what I was going to say, 6 o'clock Eastern time. So when you have the entire day that you're going to go through the meetings, you're going to go through installation, you're going to go through a walkthrough, you'll go through lunch, and then you'll have a couple more meetings, and then you'll get ready to go out to practice. So you're going to have a full learning day because you're going to have to, excuse me, smoke in the air is getting into my house now from the forest fires. I'm joking, but I'm just saying that, you know, when you start preparing against another team, you're going to start having to have some installation meetings for the defenses and the offenses they're going to play. You can't just go out there blindly. So I think the evening, afternoon, late afternoon starting time, I think will benefit both teams.
Yes, it will. Also, ESPN Nation beat writers this week picked the offseason breakout players around the league, and they did include rookies, even though they have yet to take an NFL snap. But among them, and a guy we both were impressed with throughout this offseason, Tyreek Stevenson, the second-round corner. I just like the way he approaches the game, how he talks to his teammates, how confident he is. And as John Hoke told us right as we wrapped up the minicamp, the kid quickly picked up a lot of their concepts right away.
Exactly. I mean, Jeff, how many days were we sitting there at minicamp and OTAs when all of a sudden you look across the field and here's another interception, here's another tip football, here's another great positioning, and Stevenson was a part of a lot of those. And it's one of the most difficult positions to scout in all the NFL. I'm not saying he's a diamond in the rough, but if he comes in and plays with the confidence that he's already put on display, it's going to be a great choice for the Bears scouting staff.
Yeah, he is definitely a diamond in the rough. Would be maybe a sixth-round pick that emerges. This guy, you know, they feel him right now as a second-round pick. You know, not unlike Jalen Johnson, not unlike some other Bears corners in the past in this particular scheme that you managed to get in there and start. Nathan Vasher comes to mind as a fourth-round pick, for example, and Charles Tillman, of course, is a legendary figure in that. From the division, though, I got to keep talking about the division. Romeo Doubs in Green Bay, the wide receiver. We saw so much last year about the other young man from North Dakota State, but Romeo Doubs, they're suggesting he be a breakout player with a new quarterback in Jordan Love, with a running game and some offensive linemen that can move bodies. Minnesota moving their fourth-year veteran Josh Metellus to nickel from safety and special teams. He started to really make that switch. And that's an important position in this league, as we discuss often here, and it is this year for us in Kyler Gordon.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, I think anytime you talk about the defensive backfield, you talk about one of the more difficult positions to find, whether you're inside, outside, whether you're a safety that has the deep speed or anticipation for your underneath responsibilities, or play near the line of scrimmage as a linebacker, per se. And then when you think about the development of the wide receiver positions for Green Bay, you know, it's going to be interesting because teams are going to put a lot more pressure at the line of scrimmage onto the quarterback, where with the Aaron Rodgers era, they were a little reluctant to put pressure at the line of scrimmage. So there's going to have to be a lot of different factors of offense that they're going to have to filter through in order to get Jordan Love on the same page with his receivers.
And then in Detroit, it's the safety, Ifeatu Melifonwu, former third-round pick. He made the switch from corner to safety before last season, making progress and seeing growth, according to the Lions there. And that defense is going to get the benefit of a young pass rush on the inside and outside to really crank things up over there. When we come back, Jim Miller will join us from SiriusXM NFL Radio's Moving the Chains, the former Bears quarterback, and our guest, the Bears punter, Trenton Gill. It's all coming up next here on Bears Weekly on ESPN Chicago and the Bears Radio Network.
This is Bears Weekly with the voice of the Bears for 23 years, Jeff Joniak, on the Bears Radio Network.
This segment of Bears Weekly is brought to you by Athletico Physical Therapy. Visit athletico.com to request an in-clinic or virtual appointment and start feeling better tomorrow. Welcome back to Bears Weekly. Jeff and Tom and Jim Miller from SiriusXM NFL Radio's Moving the Chains. Welcome, Big Jim. How was it down in Mobile this week? I know it's always an annual affair, the Hall of Fame, Roman Harper, Marshall Yanda, Brian Westbrook, Chris Johnson, and Clay Matthews III. Probably learned a few things and a few more stories.
Yeah, it was great, Jeff. Tom, good to be with you guys. You know, just I think Jim Nagy does a great job as the executive director of the Senior Bowl. This was the third annual Celebrity Golf Classic, and they have obviously all the Hall of Fame inductees from Clay Matthews and guys that you just mentioned. Yeah, and I think they're, you know, it's a relaxed atmosphere, and they really give you a lot of material. So it was a very fun event to be a part of, and recommend anybody to check it out if you get a chance next year in Point Clear. And you know, guys are there, the head office guys, like certainly he's retired now, but Ozzie Newsome, he's been there every year, you know. So there's a lot of good guys. You know, Robert Brazil, the 1975 defensive linebacker rookie of the year. So there are a lot of guys and celebrities that are there, and just a great event to be a part of.
Where's our invite, Jim? That's all I got to say. Have us down,
well,
you know.
You
can entertain. We can.
Year, you called the Senior Bowl. You're in.
Sure.
You're in this year, right?
Get Tom on the golf course. He can play a few rounds.
Jeff, you were playing golf yesterday. Your schedule doesn't have time to be gallivanting around. You're international during the weekend. You're
right.
Golfing on Tuesday. So I don't want to hear that.
Yeah, ESPN Golf was a lot of fun yesterday at Seven Bridges. Jim, I did stripe the ball a couple of times, but most of the time played Army Golf, and I did drain a decent putt early. And the rumor is, Tom, he showed up like he usually does in life, a minimalist. He showed up with a putter and himself, and he drained a 25-footer apparently to help his team.
He's like Happy Gilmore. All he needs is a 7-iron and a putter. That's it.
That's right, Big Jim.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, you know, one thing I did hear a couple of those interviews. Marcia Yanda, he really hit a chord with me because a terrific player for the Baltimore Ravens, of course, on a team that became used to winning. And he said something that really resonated with me, and I want both of you guys to pick up on. I talked to Cole Kmet this week at another golf event that I was with him at, and I brought it up too. He just kept saying that you get addicted to success. Addicted to success. And it's not personal success, obviously. It's part of it, but addicted to success comes from winning. And once you get that taste in your mouth, Tom experienced it, obviously, with his 85 Bears and beyond, and then you experienced it with some great organizations, including a great season in 01. Did you pick up on that when he kept slipping it in? I got addicted to success. What did that mean to you?
Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, well, you know, one thing it meant to me just early, let me just talk about this. I learned about the commitment to success early in my career by George Allen when I played in the USFL. There was nobody that spent more time being prepared to try to pass along success to his coaches and players. And he was so obsessed with it, that's what all he talked about. So that was a good lesson to learn before I, you know, became a part of the 85 Bears, because it was a tryout. It was a great team, and it was just you kind of fell into line of the success-type speeches that Mike Ditka would give. But George Allen and Mike Ditka, they're at the two opposite ends of the spectrum of personalities and how they talk about success. And it was great to be a part of, especially how that message resonated into the players.
Yeah, I think for me, some teams just ooze it, you know, and I think when obviously Shoddy took over the Baltimore Ravens, you know, they were a completely different team in how they wrote their history and how they changed it. And, you know, for me, like when I always mention, when you show up at the Steelers and they've got the 5 Lombardi trophies, when you're walking in the entryway, the expectation level, I think really created that, where it can be, you know, something that's addictive. You know, look at the expansion teams that have been out there right now. You know, there's no history or tradition there. They still have yet to write it, to know what what excellence is, and to know what can be in something that can be addictive. You know, to my knowledge, I don't believe Jacksonville's ever been to a Super Bowl. Houston certainly never has been to a Houston Super Bowl. Carolina has made it, so you can say there's a little bit of history there now where that can be addictive for them. But new ownership and everything that's going on, it's kind of been spiraling out of control since Ron Rivera left there. But I do think the organization, the expectation that they set, really creates that addictive nature, because you know what is expected of you.
So that brings us to our Bears, a team that has so many young players. Tom, this whole notion of, you know, you got to learn how to finish and learn how to win, I do buy it. I know some disagree with me. We've talked about it on this show, but can you get this young team addicted to success right away this year?
You know, part of it is an everyday attitude when you walk in the building. Jim talked about when you walk into the Steelers facility and you see the 5 Super Bowl trophies, it's inspiring. However, when you get inside the locker room and you don't have coaches giving you inspirational speeches, there has to be personalities in there that make sure that they bring in that attitude into the locker room so other guys gravitate towards it. And then they bring that attitude out in the practice field. And like I always say, on the side of a Super Bowl ring, on our Super Bowl ring, there's a 3-letter word, ACE, and it's attitude, character, and enthusiasm. And Mike Ditka felt that you better have that within your football system in order to get the best out of you and get the hardest amount of work you can get. So, you know, that's one thing when we talk about the Bears and we talk about this football team and we talk about the alpha males and those dominant personalities, this is still a roster that I need to see excuse me, I need to see clear evidence of that, and it's got to be a part of the everyday part of the team, not just how to play hard for four quarters and what that does for you.
All right, so this is something that Tom and I talked about earlier today, the division, okay, the NFC North. We still love to say it's a black and blue division because everybody came from the old NFC Central, which both of you guys had the honor of playing in, and the first thing you think of is nasty, big hits, the big nasty players that just clobbered each other day in and day out, the Ditkas, the Ray Nitschke's, the Alex Karras's, you name it. Some of those Packer teams in defense and running games, the snow, the cold. I mean, in the heyday, all four teams played the same way. Things are certainly different. What is this division now, Tom, from your perspective, and what are the Bears in it? I'd like to think they want to be a big part of that black and blue feeling.
Well, you know what? I'm always true to the game of running the ball and defense in order to get your team in a position to get into the playoffs, and then you have to morph according to your opponent then. But when you look at the Justin Fields and you look at the Justin Jeffersons and you look at the speed in Detroit and you look at the receivers that they've drafted and try to turn into players, you see what's, you know, what Minnesota has been going through, or what, you know, Green Bay is going through. When you mentioned their receivers that they have on board, you know, that's what I'm saying. Is this division still the black and blue division? Because I think it is. Because when you think about the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field and you think about the conditions that you're going to play at in Soldier Field, and then you look at the support of the crowd that's going on in Detroit and what they're building up there, and always the difficulty of playing in Minnesota, I still think this is a black and blue division. But there's a lot more playmakers coming aboard to maybe change that narrative of some of the fans.
Yeah, I see a big reset going on, Jeff. You know, when Brad Holmes, the new GM, arrived for the Lions, they made a decision to get younger, right? When Ryan Poles arrived with the Bears last year, the Bears have made a decision to get younger, right? The Bears had more players, more young players, log more snaps than any team in the NFL. So clearly, that's what they're doing. I can say the same thing for Green Bay now. No Aaron Rodgers, all their young guys are playing. They're going younger. Look at that group that's around Jordan Love, who doesn't have a lot of experience at quarterback. That's a young group, from receivers to their tight ends that they drafted. I can go down the list. And I think the same thing's happening in Minnesota, because if anything, Minnesota should have doubled down once Aaron Rodgers elected to get traded to the Jets, right? Because they were knocking on the door last year. Granted, they lost to the Giants. They just played a bad game. But look at all the starters that have been removed from Minnesota. If anything, they should have been all in, much like the Rams, and put their chips in the middle of the table. They did not do that. So to me, this is a reset division, and it's up for grabs for anybody. And there's going to be, you know, Kirk Cousins will be gone after this year, is in my opinion, for Minnesota. They'll be all young quarterbacks. Goff obviously has the most experience, but this division is now up for grabs officially, in my opinion. It's a reset.
All right, it's like Alex Karras said in all NFL films. Boy, he was serious. He did not like playing games against the Bears. He said he always got hurt. He just, I frankly, just didn't like it. That's what I want to hear when they come to Soldier Field. All right, we're going to skip the break for right now because he's patiently waiting on the phone. We welcome in our guest this week, the second-year punter of the Chicago Bears, Trenton Gill. How you doing? And thanks for your patience. What's going on, my friend?
I'm doing great. How are you guys? I'm watching the NHL draft right now. Bedard just got picked up number one by Chicago.
All right, so you just broke the news. You just broke the news on ESPN Chicago. News that everybody knew was going to happen, but this is not insignificant for you either. There's a reason you're watching the NHL draft. Obviously, the local tie-in with Bedard and the Blackhawks, but as we know, you are a Canadian citizen, even though you didn't grow up there. Your parents did. And is hockey big for you and your family?
Yeah, it's huge. I'm a huge Hurricanes fan. I just grew up in North Carolina and Raleigh. It was right there when I went to college. So I went to a lot of games there. My parents have season tickets there, so I get to go to a lot of the games. But growing up, I played. And then, yeah, both my parents grew up in Canada. So a lot of my extended family live up there, so I go up there a lot, even though I've never actually like resided there. But
and did you root for a a Canadian team when you were a little kid before Carolina even got to the NHL?
I did not. My dad's a huge Maple Leafs fan, okay. So it's always fun when they come to the Hurricanes and I get to kind of pick on them because the Maple Leafs never win.
Well, I tell you what, I was in Montreal over the weekend, and there was a lot of discussion about Bedard when they found out I was from Chicago. So everybody's got their eyes on this 17-year-old. It's crazy.
Hey, Trent, when is the first time then you picked up a football and you go, wow, I think I could get this thing off the top of my foot at good enough distance where I should start pursuing this? Because, you know, one thing about punters and kickers and long snappers, it's such a unique breed because as much as everybody says, oh, I could go out and do that, no, you couldn't. So when did you make that transformation to going, okay, I think I have the skills to be a punter?
Yeah, well, growing up, I played soccer my whole life. I really loved playing, and I always had a big leg. I always take all the free kicks and all the kicks. So then I was like, well, why don't I just try football? Like in high school, they didn't have a kicker. The kicker left. He was a senior, and I was a freshman coming in. And I was like, why don't I just try this out and see how it goes? So I actually, started kicking field goals. That's kind of how I got started. And then I grew a little bit, and I got a little too tall to be a kicker. And they were like, I went to college camps, and they were like, hey, you got to be a punter if you want to, be a specialist, basically. So I was like, all right. And then I ended up being in a very good spot. I was at NC State with A.J. Cole, who's the Raiders punter right now. And he was able to teach me a ton. I learned a lot from him. And I'm glad I was able to pursue that route. It wasn't something I, from day one was said, I was going to be an NFL punter, but it's kind of ended up that way, and I'm happy it did.
Okay, so, Trent, hold on. The other day on ESPN, I saw the top 10, and one of them was a soccer player kicking in a goal from about 60 yards away. So when you hit a football or you hit a soccer ball, is the impact the same, or is it totally different to the way it feels off your foot?
It's definitely different. So the soccer ball, the sweet spot of the soccer ball is basically the whole ball. With the football, there's such a small sweet spot that gives you a good punt, basically, or a good field goal kick. So it's definitely harder to hit a football than compared to a soccer ball.
Trenton, Jim Miller here. Good to talk to you. And let me ask you this, because you're a former kicker. I just want to get your thoughts on the new fair catch rule, because, you know, there's always good if they, you know, let's say they do take away the kickoffs, and, you know, there's always going to be the next dangerous play. And, what do they diagnose as the next dangerous play? Is it punt return? I don't know, but it concerns me because, I think everybody realizes that a return game is the exciting part of football, but I'd like to just get your thoughts on it without giving anything away of how you guys will be attacking this rule this year. Just your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing with that is the guy that's back there, if he's a good returner, he's going to take it back no matter what. Even if the rule, with this new rule, it doesn't really matter for him. The only thing that's going to change is if they have a bad returner, if they're scared. If they're scared to return, we have a good kickoff coverage, which we will, and they're scared they won't get past 25, so they'll just take the free 25. We've been coming up with different ways to prevent teams from trying to fair catch that, just scheme-wise. But, I mean, I think it shouldn't change a lot because we'll have good returners back there. And I think if you have a good returner, you're going to be excited to still take it out.
Well, let me follow up with this since Tom asked you about kicking a football compared to a soccer. And it's almost like me as a quarterback, you can manipulate a football. And that's why you're a specialist that you brought up earlier. And how many hours of dedication, say if you're, if you're going to do an angle kick to the corner or outside the hash right or outside the hash left, to get it to really check up, maybe right before the goal line. Talk about those subtle manipulations of the football that a lot of guys learn to master with all their practice at it.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely put a ton of hours in just trying to perfect those little things. I think I have about 8 to 10 punts I have, just different things that, confuse the returner, prevent them from catching it or making it, really hard for them to catch. There's a banana ball that kind of Hecker made famous. I've been working on that a lot. There's a reverse banana. There's a leaf ball. There's a pull left ball. There's a show right, hit left. There's a show left, hit right. There's a bunch of different balls, and you really don't see that until you get to the NFL and you see these guys who've kind of almost perfected the craft and mastered it. And, like, they're basically like, I'm so good at all these other punts, like, I got to come up with a new one to, like, confuse the returner. So, like, it's fun in that aspect because, like, you're constantly learning and constantly trying to, like, evolve the game, basically.
This is Bears Weekly on ESPN Chicago. Our guest is Trenton Gill, the Bears punter. Jeff and Tom and Jim Miller with you. Final moments with you. Again, thanks for hanging on with us. The monsoon game to start your NFL career, you're never going to forget it. Okay? Never. You didn't ask for that, right? It was your first NFL game. And the Bears get a win and a memorable moment for everybody. Take us back through that, and when you realize what exactly the conditions were like on a new surface and the puddles galore, how were you mentally ready for that?
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot you can do to get mentally ready for that game. I just remember running out there for pregame, and the field was just soaked, and I was like, man, I hope it stops raining. And it just kept raining the whole time. And then in the locker room, we're like, all right, got to get ready for this, got to get ready. We practiced it with, like, wet ball drill and kind of just practicing it that way. But just when we ran out there, I think my first punt, I just remember, like, stomping through puddles and, like, I'm sitting there, like, waiting for the ball, and I just feel the water just, like, sinking in my shoes. Like, it was a terrible feeling, but it was a great feeling when we ended up winning the game. Like, nothing mattered after that. It was, as long as we got the win, you know. But, I mean, it was definitely a game to remember, just being my first one, and then also just having that crazy weather event as well.
All right, our two follow-up questions to that. First of all, that's when you got the penalty for bringing the towel out to wipe off the ground.
I don't think we're going to bring that up.
But no, I want to bring up the weather in the Buffalo game, because when it was so unbelievably cold, I think everybody that is in the stands is wincing when that ball hits your foot.
Yeah, I mean, people tell me, that was the first thing everyone told me when I got up here. It's like, just wait, it gets cold. Just keep waiting, it's going to get cold. I'm like, yeah, sure, like, it's going to be like, whatever, it's not going to get too cold. And in that game, negative 30 degree wind chill. And I'm like, man, this is what everyone was talking about. But, I mean, the ball doesn't really hurt my foot that much. I mean, I've done it so many times that it really just, it's calloused up a little bit, so it doesn't really bother my foot. But that was the one game, too, where I was like, this is what people are talking about when they say Chicago's cold.
Yeah. Well, you can't believe these shoe companies. They can't come up with a galosh cleat yet. I mean, they make every other type of shoe. I mean, but how is it, you know, kicking in the rain, especially when that's heavy? Because like you said, when that water's sinking in your cleat, the leather in the shoes actually, you know, gets soft. You know, the leather gets soft and it gets really mushy, and just maybe explain the difficulties of that.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest part, too, is the ball gets heavy. And then when the ball gets heavy, like, your leg gets tired quicker. The ball doesn't go as far. But, I mean, at the same time, like, everyone's playing in those conditions. It would be different if it was just me punting a heavy ball and they somehow get a new ball for the returner. But, I mean, the returner still got to catch it. The returner still got to run around, which I think was pretty tough because, like, everyone was sliding around just with that, too. But, like, that's the biggest thing, too, is, like, everyone has to deal with those elements, not just me. So I just got to do the best I can with what I have.
All right, Trenton, we will let you go. Appreciate, again, the time. I know you've put in a lot of work here in this offseason, ready to have a follow-up. I mean, as it was, you were the third best net average in Bears history last season, hitting that over 40 mark. And I know you're a Formula One fan, but are you interested in NASCAR this weekend in the city?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to be there. I'm excited for it. Should be a great time.
All right, well, enjoy yourself and enjoy the remaining days before training camp. Trenton Gill joining us tonight, Bears punter. Thanks, as always, to Kendra Smith for helping us out. We'll take a break and have more Bears Weekly here on ESPN Chicago on the Bears Radio Network.
This is Bears Weekly with the voice of the Bears for 23 years, Jeff Joniak, on the Bears Radio Network.
This segment of Bears Weekly is brought to you by CDW. People to get it. Jeff Joniak, Tom Thayer, Jim Miller. Thanks to Trenton Gill, the Bears punter, as he gets ready for his second season. He did have a very good year. Looked the part, 67 punts. And again, that third best single season average in Bears history. Overall, 46 the average 20 inside the 20. And as a seventh-round pick, the Bears invested in this guy, and hopefully he will continue to grow. He also can kick the football off, which he had to do against the Giants due to an injury to Cairo Santos, if you might recall, in Week 4. Okay, moving on. We touched on a couple of topics here. Tom and Jim, we talk about Justin Fields all the time. How about P.J. Walker, 28-year-old undrafted free agent with the Colts coming into the league in 17? He's got 15 games of experience. He is a mobile quarterback, and he has experience with D.J. Moore in his year last year with Carolina. Are we comfortable with that and Nathan Peterman and Tyson Bagent competing here for that third spot at training camp?
You know, I like to see the same template type of quarterback. So when Luke Getsy is teaching a play inside the meeting room, that he's teaching it to similar body styles, body types, elusiveness, escapability, arm strength, and recognition. So, you know, with Trevor Siemian last year, with all due respect to him and stuff, there was such a difference in athleticism that you weren't going to teach these two guys a lot of things that they would have in common on the field. So I would like to see someone coming in here that has, as you know, as similar traits to Justin Fields as you possibly can, because when one quarterback watches the other quarterback run the play, they try to envision themselves running the play.
Yeah, I do like that they have similar attributes. Like you said, you don't got to completely switch gears with the offense. It's going to be the status quo. Let's say if Justin Fields had to go down on it, you know, for a little stint, that PJ, I don't think too much would change offensively. You know, kind of like, you know, it's out of character for Philadelphia. They drafted the quarterback from Stanford, who's really a pocket passer. He's nowhere near like what Jalen Hurts is. So their offense would have to change dramatically if that rookie Tanner McKee had to get in and play for them. That's not the case for the Bears. Certainly PJ is, he's raw. He's got a limited sample size. I do think he did put some good stuff on tape and why teams were interested in him, but he's a very young player. I think everybody knows that, but it will keep the offense in the similarity. And he's got skills. He's got a good arm and can distribute the football, and he's got an arm to let it fly as well. He was throwing with DJ Moore, and obviously at that point they had Anderson down there as well who could fly, but Anderson's now with Miami, and he could get it out there to him. And he is a good athlete. We look at P.J. Walker. So little inexperience, may not have the whole playbook opened in its entirety when he's in there due to the inexperience, but we'll see where it goes.
Last year, I know on this show, we talked a lot about hoping the Bears would get more size at receiver. So that's been accomplished. Need to get bigger. What's the story this year, Tom, at receiver? What are you looking for?
But last year we were so caught up in size, and so they went and got E.Q. St. Brown. They got Chase Claypool. They talked about Cole Kmet, what he can offer as size at the wide receiver. Then it was Darnell Mooney. They brought in Velus Jones and so on and so forth. But, you know, this year, DJ Moore and giving what happens to Darnell Mooney. Is he ready to go immediately? Or is this something that he's going to have to build up throughout the season? You know, are we going to go completely away from what we were talking about last year in terms of size at the receiver? And now you have DJ Moore, Darnell Mooney, like I mentioned, Velus. You still have Claypool and EQ St. Brown, but Chase finished the offseason injured, and EQ St. Brown is the type of guy that is inserted in the offense differently. So I don't know. I mean, I still think that the immediate development of the relationship between DJ Moore and Justin is a positive, but I don't know what the receiver position is right now, because last year we were talking about size. Now we need to be talking about efficient targets.
Yeah, they got to make plays. DJ Moore, I'm not worried about one bit whatsoever. Claypool's got to pick it up. I mean, that's pretty clear. It was a slow roll for him when he landed. Everybody can say, oh, he didn't hook on the offense. Well, that's his job. He needs to learn how to do that, and he needs to get caught up to speed with the offense. So that's on him. As for Mooney, is he going to be the same player? Coming off an injury, you know, he should be able to return to form. He's a guy who attacks it pretty hard, and I would think he will. And I would say the same thing for, as I said, about Claypool for Velus Jones. Velus Jones has got to pick it up. let's be honest, he lost the Washington game because he muffed a punt, and that can't happen. And he muffed it in another game, too. I think it was the Giant game. So he's got to pick it up. He's got to be more consistent. He's got to be pro at the end of the day. And that's not on the coaches. That's on both of those young men. They got to do it themselves.
And I'm very excited about Tyler Scott joining the Bears as well.
Yeah.
Out of University
of
Cincinnati.
There.
Yeah, a lot of speed indeed. He turned some heads during this offseason. All right, time for another break. This is Bears Weekly on the Chicago Bears Radio Network and ESPN Chicago.
This is Bears Weekly with the voice of the Bears for 23 years, Jeff Joniak, on the Bears Radio Network.
VIP access to every Bears home game, exclusive seating, sideline credentials, and more now available. Get the ultimate VIP fan package this season by visiting ChicagoBearsVIP.com. Jeff Joniak, top there. Jim Miller with you. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Holiday week next week. We'll be with you on July 3rd, so that'll be our next Bears weekly show, and so I'm excited to have you along for that. Running game. You touched on it, Tom. You still have that mentality. I do, too. I know Jim's a QB, but he didn't mind taking and turning and hand sticking it in the belly of the back, as I like to say, with the idea that Justin may run the ball less, but not taking away his instincts to do it. Can the Bears still be at the top of the heap in rushing yards this year? Because they certainly did that a year ago. What are your thoughts?
You know, I don't think we're exclusively talking about the running back position here, because the offensive line has to show significant improvement also, because it can't be Justin ejecting a pocket early on a pass play and then turning that into a running play. But what can you average per rushing attempt without David Montgomery? And so now with Khalil Herbert and the rest of the crew, can they not only pick up the slack, but can they improve it? So if you wanted to take away a certain percentage of the runs away from Justin Fields, the design called quarterback runs, and you give them to the running back, do they have the skill set, the power, and the ability to pick up those types of numbers? And I think that's going to be one of the question marks, because I don't want Justin going into every single game saying, okay, you know, this year our running back's only averaging, you know, 2.7 to 3.3 per carry. So that means if I see an open running lane, I have to take off. And that's what's going to assist our running numbers the most. Because when you look at some of the big runs he had last year, they were the biggest statistical help to the running game of that day. But to me, I'm interested to see if this running back position can be better and be more profitable than it was last year.
I think they should be, because Bears were predictable last year. They're number one in rushing the football, and they're 32nd in passing. So if they can get this passing game going, they'll be less predictable. Teams knew the running game was coming at them last year. That's the more you can do. And if the Bears passing game gets up to par with where it needs to be, they'll be less predictable. They'll be able to attack teams differently from that standpoint. And let's face it, I think we all agree the offensive line has gotten better. I think Darnell Wright is going to be a really good player when it's all said and done. And, you know, we'll see how the rest of the line sorts out. Obviously, Braxton Jones needs to make a big jump at the left tackle spot. And certainly Tevin Jenkins needs to continue to be on the ascend. And that's the same with Cody. And Davis has to do his job at the right guard spot. But to me, they should be better than what they were last year, because they'll be less predictable than what they were. Teams knew what was coming, and they couldn't stop the Bears' run game. Let's face it.
You know, Jim and Jeff, because you, Jim, you reminded me of it when you say predictable, because I think the Bears have to develop that side between Darnell Wright and Nate Davis, that even though you can predict what they're going to do, when they need that power run, when they need that third and one, that third and two, that second and short, and everybody knows exactly where they're going to run the ball, they got to be able to run the ball and have success doing it. So I do think that as much as you want this offense to be unpredictable between run and pass, I think there's got to be a time where you eventually develop that strength side of this offensive line where you can be predictable, but you can still be successful.
3,014 yards rushing, average 5.4 yards per carry as a team. as the Bears led the National Football League in that category. All right, talking about home records, I went back and just out of curiosity, that stretch from 85 when you joined the Bears, Tommy, through the 88 season when you guys were clicking on all cylinders and made the playoffs annually, that stretch of 5 years, 85, 86, well, 4 years, 85, 86, 87, 88, you guys were 28-4 at home in the regular season, let alone playoffs, but 28-4 in the regular season. To me, establishing that home field is obviously everybody's wish and hope, and you try it. If you're playing 9 games, you hope to go 8-1. If you're playing 8, you're 7-1, but at worst 6-2 to start having a home field advantage. And with December home games this year, and teams may be in it, they may be out of it, they may not be interested in playing some frigid, crappy weather. Let's put a stake in the ground here, buddy.
You know, Jeff, I don't know if your memory goes back that far. If you can remember when we used to call it the Black and Blue Division, like we started the show. I'm just joking.
Yes.
That, you know, that was the MO of coming into Chicago, because we had an incredibly loud, supportive crowd, and we kind of took the sting out of the opponent because we held the ball for so much time of possession. But then our defense came in, and they did the destruction that they became known for. So it is developing that reputation at home that people know that it's one of the more difficult environments to come in and try to play. And I think the Bears, with Soldier Field, with a natural grass stadium, whether it's the Christmas Eve game where it's 30 below or it's the monsoon at the start of the season, San Francisco, they never predicted that rain. They never thought it was going to rain like that when they were coming to Chicago the day before that game.
Jim, did you hate playing in any particular stadium?
Yeah, I think Arrowhead is a very difficult place to play. For the crowd reasons, it can get loud in there for an outdoor stadium. It's hard to believe that them and Seattle are the two loudest stadiums, and they're outdoor stadiums. And those are difficult stadiums to play in. But definitely, I thought Arrowhead was a difficult place to play. But, you know, that is when they had Derek Thomas, too. He's pretty difficult to go against.
Yeah, just a touch, just a tad. But, you know, yeah. when the Bears are winning.
Ask Andy Heck.
Yeah, right.
He was a tackle that gave up 7 sacks to him in one game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, good recall there. He's offensive line coach right now.
I know
for the Kansas City Chiefs.
that memory would haunt me the rest of my offensive life.
Maybe you wouldn't be in the media anymore. You know, you'd be hiding still at 62 years old.
You know, I think he's had triplets, and he's been an offensive line coach since he retired.
Yes. All right, we're going to take our last break and one more segment to go. We'll go whip around what's new today in the NFL. Some big news, actually. We'll get to that with Tom Thayer and Jim Miller. Blackhawks have selected Connor Bedard, number 1 overall in the NHL draft. City's buzzing in that regard for the 17-year-old phenom. We'll continue our discussion on the Bears after this break on ESPN 1000 and the Bears Radio Network.
This is Bears Weekly with the voice of the Bears for 23 years, Jeff Joniak, on the Bears Radio Network.
This segment of Bears Weekly is brought to you by Athletico Physical Therapy. Visit athletico.com to request an in-clinic or virtual appointment and start feeling better tomorrow. Final moments here on the show with Jim Miller and Tom Thayer. Jim, we got to talk about the gambling, because I think Adam Schefter's report today on ESPN has fans probably a little nervous about who might be expecting season-long suspensions. You're ear to the ground guy in the league and an insider as well. This is subject of a league investigation into possible violations. We know at least one name could be on that list, Isaiah Rogers of the Colts, a kick returner. But should teams be nervous here, or fans nervous?
I think you're nervous of guys, but I think it's for the right reasons. I actually think the suspensions are going to be too light. You know, if they're saying Isaiah Rogers is going to get an entire year, I think the NFL, hey, they've gotten in bed with gambling, and now they need to make sure that the integrity of the league doesn't get spoiled here or get tainted. And so I think for some guys, you just got to throw the book at them, you know, and some guys should be banished for life if they're even involved remotely with it. Because I do think the perception is some games are fixed as it is. So you got to eliminate that. as an organization or as a league, because the integrity of the league is at stake. Again, they decided to do this, and so I think for them to come out and have to lay harsh punishments, I do think they have to be harsh, because there can't be any perception from the public that there is shenanigans going on. So I do think it'll be hard suspensions, but some of them I've heard, I think they're a little light, in my opinion. I'd send a clear message to any other player in the NFL or anybody in a front office or anybody involved, involved with the league at all, that, hey, this is what the consequences are, because they can't have anything but the integrity take down this league. And that's got to be first and foremost, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, if I think any player out there makes a claim that they weren't aware of what their responsibilities or what the repercussions could be, it's a kind of a joke, because the first thing that you see when you walk into a locker room on game day is the signs taped on the wall. They do it every single locker room about how much of an infraction that is against the laws of the NFL.
All right, we got a minute to go. Jim, Lloyd Howell, tell us who he is, what he's all about. He's the new NFLPA Executive Director, replacing the outgoing Damaris Smith, MBA, Harvard Business. A big business background, not legal like D. Smith was. Does that matter?
Yeah, I think this is kind of an outsider, who collects data. Essentially, he's basically worked for a defense contractor for the United States government, all right, where they collect data. Yes, he was the chief financial officer and treasurer, but the part about what he did is that business collects data. So it doesn't seem to really fit with what the NFLPA is doing. So he's got to get up to date on certainly the sport of football. But let's be honest, he's 8 years away from the next collective bargaining agreement. I don't know how much he's going to do, and who knows? He's already worked 34 years. Does he go 6 years and then retire and not even be a part of the next collective bargaining agreement? I don't know, but seems like an odd choice, in my opinion.
Many leadership roles, though, in his background, that's for sure. All right, that's going to wrap it up for us. Jim, thank you. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on the 3rd of July. All right, buddy?
Sounds good. You guys, too. Have a good night.
And Tom,
hi,
take care. Enjoy your rest of your week as well. Thanks to Eric Ostrowski, our executive producer of the Bears Radio Network, Kendra Smith, our producer tonight, along with Dan Brody and Jordan Tredup from the Bears. And thanks as punter Trenton Gill joined the program earlier tonight. For Jim Miller, Tom Thayer, I'm Jeff Joniak. Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been Bears Weekly on the new radio home of the Chicago Bears, AM 1000 ESPN Chicago. We'll talk to you next week. Stay tuned. Jeff Miller is next. I think he'll be talking hockey. And Connor Bedard, followed by White Sox baseball in Anaheim against the Angels. Good night, everybody. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Chicago Bears Network presentation of Bears Weekly, hosted by the mayor of Bearsville, Jeff Joniak, and Surfmaster Tom Thayer. Podcasts are available on the Chicago Bears official app. Brought to you by Verizon and Apple Podcasts. Bears Weekly has been brought to you by Bet Rivers and Miller Lite.